Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark the Liberty, and joining me today is...
Grumpy Knockreiner!
Grumpy Knockreiner. On today's episode, we've got quite a few news topics to cover, including some that really tick Corey off. So let's go ahead and get started. All right, we have quite a few news topics to cover today. So what verb are we going to do? Mosey on in? Let's mosey on in.
Ooh, mosey. We're cowboys back in the 60s, 20s? I don't know. When were black and white cowboy movies popular?
Oh, okay. Cowboys were far before the 1960s, but I'm assuming that's not what you were implying.
No, I obviously don't watch enough Westerns, spaghetti Westerns. I'm a failure.
So we get to start this week with one of my favorite little things to do, and that's dunk on Facebook. So the state of Illinois back in 2008 enacted a new law that required companies to obtain permission before using people's biometric data and also be transparent with how the data is used and kept and deleted after a certain period of time.
So what's the problem? Facebook's great at that.
I'm sure they are. Well, in 2015, Facebook users in Illinois sued the company with a lawsuit alleging that Facebook violated these laws through the use of facial recognition software and its photo tagging feature. Basically, if you've used Facebook before, you probably noticed when you upload a photo, it'll try and automatically identify people that are in the photo and suggest tags, which, because individuals didn't opt into this, technically violated Illinois law. So why this is news is just this last week, during their earnings call, Facebook actually announced that they had agreed to pay a $550 million settlement to the people of Illinois as the result of this lawsuit. And this is actually the same technology that led to Facebook having that $5 billion settlement with the FTC we talked about last summer, where the FTC said Facebook misrepresented users' ability to control their photos and how their photos were used in regards to facial recognition. So I wanted to talk about this, not just because I love every time Facebook gets fined any amount of money, but also because there's been this growing trend of facial recognition showing up all over the place. Like social media, obviously, with image recognition and tagging people. Airport security, it seems more and more often every time I hop on a Delta flight, they just ask me to take my picture and I go through. Where was I recently? It was like on a cruise or something as well. It's showing up everywhere in travel, showing up in police. So London's rolling out facial recognition through their CCTV system.
And you're just talking about the big industrial stuff. There's literally no modern camera that doesn't have facial recognition built in just to help with autofocus nowadays.
And these are all fueled with databases of people's pictures.
Yeah, although the facial recognition I'm talking about is less about matching it to a database and the cameras and more about just detecting a face so it's something to look
at. Exactly. But it does open up some privacy concerns because, as we know, nothing is unhackable. And so there's, in my opinion, some risks to storing this personal information out there in databases, whether it be tokenized or not, because we've talked about this in previous security predictions too. If someone was able to get a hold of that, say by hacking a U.S. government organization that holds a bunch of fingerprints for military and intelligence individuals, they could potentially use that to... as a form of authentication into sensitive systems. Obviously, that's a bit complex to actually execute, but it is a genuine risk and one that we've talked about before.
Very genuine risk. We've seen ourselves how a picture can bypass Android's trusted face. So if you can get a face, a picture of somebody, it's quite possible. Although hopefully the governments are using more detailed biometric validation.
I would hope. And so anyone that listens to this podcast knows that I'm a big privacy advocate, and I think you're somewhat on that end too. But I wanted to, what are your thoughts? Like, do we need a federal law when it comes to facial recognition and how it can be applied?
Yes.
And what do you
think? Period.
Period.
I think our prediction speaks for itself in that we think there needs to be a U.S. GDPR, even though I don't think it's going to happen federally in the U.S. this year. And I frankly think any type of a GDPR that deals with our personally identifiable information has to include biometrics.
In fact, so the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, posted a blog post about something similar relatively recently. And they pointed out that Illinois' Biometric Information Privacy Act is, they called it one of our nation's most important privacy safeguards, because it is really strict on how organizations can handle this type of biometric data. Like, $550 million to Facebook isn't a whole lot of money in terms of their revenue, but it is still a pretty massive fine from this style of incident.
For us, I don't know about Facebook, though.
Hey, that correct,
might be
yes.
a chump change.
What was it, like $20 billion was the revenue last quarter or something like that? So I'm sure they'll recover.
Yeah, I think we've mentioned this on past broadcasts when we were talking about our predictions, but the California Consumer Privacy Act actually does have a biometric section in it, and it actually is treats biometrics even more sensitively than GDPR, or goes a little Good. Deeper. So I think we are moving in that direction.
And there was in my research, I found a federal bill that was introduced in, I think, March of last year by Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri, called the Commercial Facial Recognition Privacy Act. And basically, it boils down to the act was introduced to prohibit certain entities from using facial recognition technology to identify or track an end user without obtaining the affirmative consent of the end user. And it does have some exclusions, like state, local, federal government, law enforcement, and national and intelligence security agencies are excluded from this. But it, in theory, would protect against private organizations using this, which, depending on how you feel about privacy, could be a good thing. Now, obviously, this is a bill in the Senate and probably won't go anywhere anytime soon with our current political
climate.
What are
you talking about? I have a feeling they can pass lots of stuff in Congress. There's tons of compromise. People are working together. It's never been better, Mark.
Exactly. Funny enough, this was introduced by a Republican senator, so who knows?
That's a cool thing about cybersecurity, is it really should be party neutral.
It really should be. Hopefully something goes through. So obviously we're starting to see the, I don't want to say fallout, the impact of the California Privacy Act, and hopefully that starts kickstarting other states and the federal government to hop on board too.
I will take 2 minutes to kind of be devil's advocate in that I think you and I absolutely agree on the privacy stuff. But one thing that's going to be a constant challenge for society, and I think we've talked about it before with all kinds of big data, is there's value to facial recognition. There's a lot of useful things we can and would like to do. In fact, I would even argue that if everybody is on board with it, if the owner of the face is okay with it with their friends, that auto-tagging feature in Facebook is kind of nice. I think the key thing is it has to be controllable by the person whose face it is.
Limited in scope.
It may not even have to be limited in scope if that person wants to open up the scope.
Fair.
Like, everyone has a different view of how private they want to be. The key thing is the individual of the face always has to make the decision for storage, usage, every little detail. So if you create a system that gives them the ultimate control, including the ability to take away that face tagging from his friends that want to tag him, it's a good thing. And I can think a lot of neat ways that face tracking helps. I mean, I use it all the time in drones just to keep my gimbal pointed at the right thing. We need to realize that technologies are not evil or good. They're really benign, and it's up to how we use them.
I think that's fair. Yeah. I still don't like it.
I don't like the way businesses today
Correct.
Are treating our private information. More importantly, the way they're monetizing it against our will, which we'll probably talk more about in this particular podcast.
We most likely will. So let's hop on to our next segue to a slightly unrelated topic, though. Earlier this week, a fraud intelligence firm called Gemini Advisory published an advisory that they had found a breach titled Big Bada Boom Number 3. Yep. You should see the images that were associated
Big
with this,
Bada Boom!
Yes. Containing stolen payment card data.
Where is Gemini located?
I have no idea.
Jersey?
So they didn't name it.
Oh.
the person who posted this payment card data breach on a very popular dark web marketplace named it.
I wonder if that's like an indicator that we can use to attribute that particular criminal.
Maybe. I saw the forum post for this. Like, it looked like a 1990s website with, like, nuclear mushroom clouds along the top.
By the way, that's, like, every first-tier, low-end dark website
And then an image of Bruce Willis crawling through a duct going, yeah, big bada boom.
Okay, there we go. Well, I guess it could be an international person that just likes American movies.
Could be. So anyways, Gemini, through some analysis, determined that the breach originated from Wawa, which is an East Coast-based convenience store and gas station chain with stores from, what was it, New York to Virginia and then the state of Florida.
Strangely enough, I've heard of it because of when I can't remember if it's the NPR podcast, but someone talked about Wawa under a different context, so I know of that chain.
I've heard of it because every time I visit my dad in Florida, that's the gas station I fill up at on my way back to the airport. So the breach appears to have affected people that visited Wawa stores from March to December of last year, likely affected over 850 stores and 30 million sets of payment cards and associated payment card data. Basically anything you would enter into a gas pump, like a PIN or a postal code. The prices for this data actually have a bit of a range. So it was broken up by country of origin for the card and the associated data. U.S. cards, the median price was right around $17 per record. International ones were as high as $210 per card, which is a fair bit of money. But the poster of this data claimed they had verified, I think it was like 90 to 95% of them were still active.
They have to be verified because I'm not at all surprised that European or international cards are worth more than U.S. ones. Apparently, U.S. people tend to have bad credit. but I'm surprised by even 17 for a U.S. card.
I mean, a lot of money.
They turned into, but I mean, if it's a decent card, it's not that much to get someone's credit. But it used to be pennies on the dollar in some of the past breaches. I mean, you could get U.S. cards for 50 cents, whereas it took, you know, something like 20 to get European cards. So I'm surprised by how high they are now.
Yeah. So how about some like defensive tips? What can people do to like, obviously you can't control what happens on the network of these stores you go and purchase stuff at. So what can you do to like keep yourself safe from this style of breach?
Well, I think you have a number of tips to share. One I'll just add real quick is keep track of security news like this, right? I mean, you want to know if any vendor has a card breach because I mean, there's a reason you just gave people the dates from March to December is they can go back and see if they bought anything at Wawa to know if they're affected, because that way you can quickly cancel your card. Also, make sure you give card providers your right email because you'll probably get notified if this happens. If you get notified, do something about it. But there's other things like maybe what type of card to use. Why don't you share a few tips?
Yeah, and one of the tips you'll usually get when it comes to fraud protection is using a credit card versus a debit card. There's a lot more, at least in the States, a lot more requirements for credit card companies when it comes to reversing fraudulent transactions and you contesting potentially fraudulent transactions that debit cards really don't have to follow. Like banks are, they obviously want to try and help, but there's a lot less they can be held accountable for when it comes to a fraudulent transaction.
Nope, credit cards are the way to go.
And another thing, checking your statements regularly. Like, don't just pay your credit card bill. Just give it a quick glance and look for stuff suspicious. Because oftentimes, if someone steals your credit card, they're going to make a cheap transaction first just to see if it works. And then they'll go buy themselves a new smart TV or something. So if you can catch that first one, it might set off some red flags that something's going on.
Definitely look at bank statements.
And then most these days, fraud alerts, you're automatically opted in, but I've noticed in a few like cards I've registered, you do have to manually opt in to fraud alerts and fraud protection, things like that, where they'll text you for like big purchases. Yeah, it might be annoying to like have to reply yes to a message when you go out and buy some new big thing, but it prevents the bad guys from going and doing it if they manage to get a copy of your card.
Yeah, and I think those are probably the best what you can actually do as a victim user. I do want to take a second to talk about an industry thing, though, mm-hmm. and that's we should not be using PIN magnetic stripe and signature cards anymore. We need to be 100% on EMV. Now, I think most of the people in the U.S. finally realize this is slowly becoming a partial reality in that PIN readers, chip and PIN readers are showing up. Mm-hmm. We're getting used to the little delay of putting them in and waiting to remove them and all that jazz. But one, we're like at least 7 years to 10 years behind Europe on doing this. Two, it's still security by obscurity because every single chip and PIN card still has a magnetic stripe, still fails to that, still has a signature. And, I do know some chip cards that don't always require a PIN. So until
the majority of the U.S. credit cards,
literally just remove that darn magnetic stripe and require a PIN with every transaction, this fraud is just going to blow up in the U.S. And the easiest way to make bad guys not do this anymore is remove how easy it is for them to monetize. And even though they might be able to steal data, although there's more encryption with chip and PIN, it's going to be much harder for them to create a fraudulent card that actually works.
Yep. So in general, attackers are lazy. So if you take away the easy option, you make it a lot less enticing.
They'll move on to something else that's easy, or, you know, they might have to try harder to break it, but it will not cost us as much money. So retailers out there, I know that upgrading the chip and PIN, you know, some of you may not like this idea because early on chip and PIN might slow down transactions. And I hear in retail, you know, just slowing down every transaction by 1 second means you're pushing less customers through. And of course, there's the cost of upgrading. But I think in the long run, these costs will save you money. You know, when you pay Visa, American Express, and MasterCard that small fee every time you use a credit card in your store, part of that fee is accounted for the fraud protection they offer. They're writing off the liability. When they pay for fraud for their customers, they're not just doing that out of the kindness of their heart. They're upping all their processing fees to account for those payments.
And if memory serves me correctly, the only real reason we've started seeing PIN readers show up in the States is because it was about a year and a half, 2 years ago, where they transferred liability to the retailer if you're using magnetic stripe. So if you're using chip or PIN or using it EMV, the card processor takes liability for fraudulent transactions. If you're using magnetic stripe, though, it goes down to the retailer.
Yep.
Which is a good first step, I guess.
It's a nice incentive. I mean, it's kind of sad it has to happen, but I'm sure retailers don't love that, but it is a good incentive for forcing people to do the right thing.
So let's hop back on the privacy train again. This latest news story comes out of Russia, where Russia's Federal Security Service just announced this week that they've begun blocking access to the privacy-focused email provider ProtonMail. In response to repeated fictitious bomb threats originating from users of that service. Some collateral damage of this blocking is also blocking Proton VPN, which is a pretty popular VPN provider in parts of the world. In a statement, though, Proton Mail questioned the effectiveness of this ban, pointing out that criminals will just switch to a different email provider, and blocking them isn't going to solve the underlying problem, which I tend to agree with, and I feel like that's a issue that we're starting to see more and more now with countries trying to, say, backdoor encryption or block certain encrypted apps in the name of law enforcement, where they're really just impacting everyday users and weakening their security and privacy, and the bad guys will just use something else.
And that's my argument for WhatsApp all the time. I mean, one, you should not have a government backdoor, period, but if you put one in WhatsApp, the first thing that's going to happen is everyone will move to the next encrypted app that doesn't do that, and the next one. And if the U.S. government keeps doing that, they'll start using the Russian messaging app that doesn't do it. It's stupid to blame one mail provider or one VPN app for everything, because there's plenty of other ones that will end up offering the same capability.
And even for like the relatively tech-savvy person, there's ways around this particular Proton Mail ban. Like Proton Mail pointed out, just use someone else's VPN to get to your service, or use Tor, which gets past just about all of Russia's security blocks. So it's a disturbing trend that I'm not happy with governments trying to... It's basically giant collateral damage with everyday users of these apps in the name of law enforcement, when in practicality, this type of thing isn't really going to help them. So now let's move on to any other closing thoughts on that, Corey? I think we're on the same boat, right?
No, we're totally on the same boat.
Let's hop on to the last news topic, which also continues on the privacy train. And this one's a bit of a betrayal from a security company, it feels like. So earlier last week, Vice's motherboard column published a joint investigatory piece with PC Mag on antivirus provider Avast and their practices of harvesting user browsing data and selling it through a subsidiary called Jumpshot. I would highly recommend, if this is interesting to you, go check out either the piece on PC Mag or on motherboard, because they're both really interesting and really in depth in terms of analyzing documents that they got out of these organizations. But really, the short of it is, during installation, Avast will prompt users to opt into sharing data. And at the time of the article, Jumpbox claimed to have 100 million active devices as a portion of the 435 million active users for Avast every month. And then Jumpbox then repackages this data and sells it to organizations like Google or Microsoft, TripAdvisor. Pepsi was on there. Home Depot was on there as well. And one of the main feeds that they were selling on there was this thing they advertised as the every click feed, where companies can basically track someone's complete browsing behavior across any particular website. Some examples they threw out were tracking what people are searching for in Google, tracking GPS coordinates entered into Google Maps, LinkedIn company page visits, even user activity on Pornhub as they're browsing through adult websites. You can see why, as a user of Avast AV, this might be concerning to you if you had unwittingly opted into this and suddenly your browsing data is being sold to other organizations. They did claim that it was all de-anonymized and that it isn't tied to a specific user.
I think you mean was anonymized.
Anonymized,
you'll
yes.
You'll get into the D in a second.
But it's really easy to de-anonymize that depending on browsing habits and browsing patterns. Because you know organizations like Google, Facebook, them all are tracking similar things. And it's pretty easy to tie fingerprints for individual users to each other. Now, 2 days after this article was published, Avast CEO announced that they would be shutting down JumpShot and ending this practice. But this isn't the first time that Avast specifically has even been caught in this. Like back in October, the author for Adblock Plus noted that an Avast extension and a few other subsidiary ones were basically doing the exact same thing for users that installed them in their web browser. And it was to the point where Firefox and Chrome both removed those extensions from their browser extension stores back in December. And we've seen plenty of other cases with organizations tracking all of this metadata that they don't necessarily need and then selling it off to other companies. What are your thoughts, Corey? It feels like we're moving towards a time when all of our information is basically aggregated and for sale and there's no way to remain anonymous on the internet.
I think we're past that. I have two reactions to this. One is kind of meh, just because I feel like this is happening all the time. But the second is extreme disgust with this particular incident. So, I mean, we know Facebook's doing this, the Googles are doing this, there's probably a million just software products out there that are doing this. If you don't read your EULA and you give them any sort of personal information because stockholders are always demanding more money and people seem to can't, and companies nowadays can't seem to stay in their lane of providing the service they say they do. They're always finding ways to do something like sell your information for extra revenue. I think this is happening all the time. So to some extent, it's like, yeah, this really sucks. It should have been fixed long ago, but it's kind of the norm, unfortunately. But what really disgusts me about this incident is this is a security company. Avast, you should be freaking ashamed. This stuff, I know that you sell it and it's for marketers. This stuff gives attackers reconnaissance on a victim. It can help me phish someone, which is something you're supposed to protect your users from. Yep. You have no clue who third parties are reselling this information to, and it's been proven many times that stalkers and bounty hunters and attackers resell this stolen information.
We've seen talks about that at like Black Hat and DEF CON of like bounty hunters taking this information from
these
types of
firms. There's a big New York Times. I mean, it's you should be freaking ashamed. And I don't often go against other security companies publicly because I have, you know, I'm a biased person of my company. I think all companies are good. But people should go out of business. People should boycott any security company that sells your private data. This can be dangerous. I don't understand why anyone would let Avast get away with this, even though they've figured out their errors and fixed it.
And we really only found this out because of documents leaked from that subsidiary JumpShot that Motherboard and PCMag managed to get their hands on. Like,
it's
if those hadn't leaked
disgusting.
Out, we probably wouldn't even know about it. Now, Avast did claim that this all complies with California's CCPA
and GDPR.
Care.
And by the way, it probably doesn't.
Exactly.
I mean, I guess you can write off, and the problem is people don't read EULAs, and EULAs waive every single thing. I'm sure our software EULAs waive responsibility for every single thing, but this is just unconscionable for a security company.
Yep. So they did mention they're getting rid of jump shot and shuttering that practice, but they're not necessarily ending the data collection. They did announce that they're going to make their opt-in checkbox more overt by next month. But even then, it's still, like you said, it's pretty disgusting for a security company to be caught doing this, especially considering they had to trust.
By the way, I may not, as we talked about data and big data, I'm not opposed to the collection if it's transparent. There are legitimate ways that security companies can do things that help you by keeping things like browser links, especially when they relate to things that you might have a known threat for. But it's reselling this data to other people, not protecting this data, putting this data in the hands of somebody else, and basically showing the world that you don't care anything about your customers' privacy or their security.
Yep. I think I agree with you with that entirely. So what can an everyday person do in this case? I guess uninstall offending programs. And I don't like advocating for people to read EULAs because it's really just no one's going to sit there and read 100 pages.
We're actually talking about privacy laws. I think someone needs to make a law about the proper way to transparently describe the types of rights you're giving up whenever you install any sort of product. I mean, EULAs are at this point by design written in a way that are supposed to be obscure mm-hmm. and to minimize your understanding or feeling about what kinds of rights you're giving up. Anyone that's read a EULA, which I have done, I mean,
nerd.
No, it was actually probably for one of the security articles we do on our blog. I'm definitely not, I don't read every one because it's just impossible to read every EULA nowadays. But that is the problem.
Yep.
And when you do read a EULA, the language they're using and the verbiage they're using is trying to say, oh, don't worry about the man behind the curtain. You're giving us everything, but it doesn't really matter because we're really nice.
And things like GDPR do help with that a little bit. Like one of GDPR's requirements is the privacy notice must be concise, transparent, intelligible, and easy in an easily accessible form.
Yep.
But again, that's just Europe.
Yeah.
So we really need that kind of stuff to expand to other countries.
I think
like
they
around.
Need to be very specific that it's down to every detail in the software EULA.
It would be nice if you could just, when you go to install the program, you get a little window with the bullet points of here's the data we collect and how we use it, period.
Yeah.
And how you can delete it.
Now, at the flip side, we work for a vendor too. That would require lots of work and reprogramming and redesign. So you do have to give businesses the time and the understanding that they have to invest in this. But I think there's a compromise there. I think there's a compromise there that's satisfying to business and won't hurt revenue and can really do a lot to protect our privacy, which is directly related to security, guys. If people know too much about you, they'll be able to socially engineer you more.
Compromise, I like that. Maybe we can get some compromise to get a bill like this passed.
Yeah,
someday.
Through our Congress, I'm sure it'll happen.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions on today's topics or suggestions for future episode topics, reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @XORRO_. Corey is at @SecAdept. And the both of us are at #The443Podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week.
Or at least hear you.
Or hear
you. Actually, we won't do either.
Do we even know you exist?
Ooh. What if a tree falls in a forest?
Do any of us exist?
We're all just virtual reality. It's a simulation. Elon Musk is AI.
Probably.